Welcome to Take Note. I'm Christine Allen. The Vietnam War affected everyone who lived through the era in one way or another, whether they were veterans, family or friends of veterans, or anti-war protesters. WPSU-TV's new documentary, A Time to Heal, explores stories of Pennsylvanians who were deeply affected by Vietnam. The documentary premieres Thursday, September 14th at 8 p.m. on WPSU-TV. Our guest today on Take Note is WPSU's Lindsay Whistle Fenton, who, along with colleague Frank Christopher, is co-producer and co-writer of A Time to Heal. Whistle Fenton also appears in the documentary, interviewing both veterans and anti-war protesters. Lindsay Whistle Fenton, co-producer, co-writer, and director of A Time to Heal, welcome to Take Note.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
How did this whole project, this WPSU TV documentary, get started?
We got wind of the fact that Ken Burns was going to tackle the Vietnam War for one of his upcoming projects. And then what we do as a local station is look for what we can do that really adds additional value to that. We didn't want to do something that was just an extension of what Ken Burns was going to do, because I'm sure it'll be amazing and exhaustive in its coverage. We wanted to look at how can we serve our local community, how can we serve people in Pennsylvania talking about the Vietnam War, doing something that's different from what they're already going to see in the Ken Burns documentary. So we looked at that and we thought, well, we can tell Pennsylvania's story. We can tell a story about people who were impacted by the war, either who fought in the war or opposed the war, living in Pennsylvania. So that's what we did.
This program is a very personal journey for you, and you take part in it as yourself. For someone as young as you are, born many years after the Vietnam War ended, why was it important to you to make that journey?
That was actually something that we decided early on as another way to kind of differentiate this from what people are probably used to seeing with Vietnam, because there's so many great films about it, and I watched a lot of them when I was researching, but we thought, well, there is this kind of opportunity to bring generations together in looking at this. And one of the interesting dynamics that emerged was my co-producer and writer, Frank Christopher, lived through Vietnam. So he had the experience of having lived through that time, and I kind of came to it from this fresh perspective. And as we were having this exchange in the early phases of getting this going, we kind of came up with this idea of, well, what if we just follow this journey of this person being me, who really doesn't know much about Vietnam. I mean, I knew the basics, but not much else. And that's kind of how we ended up with me sort of appearing in this as a character alongside the other people that we spoke with.
How did you decide where to begin the show?
So the first thing we shot was actually the dedication in Muncie to William Merrill, who was killed in action in Vietnam. And we had spoken with his sister, Lana Brown, who's interviewed in the film, by phone. And that was actually our very first day of production. And it was a really good kind of glimpse into what the rest of this production would hold, just in terms of the emotion and the amazing people that we got to meet and speak with throughout this journey. That was our first day of production. And then the program opens in Veterans Day in Bellefonte, which is my adopted hometown. I've lived there for several years since I came to live in central Pennsylvania. And we just decided that being, you know, where I call home now, that was a good place to start this journey of really exploring and examining the impact of Vietnam. There's a lot of veterans in that community, so that just seemed like a natural fit.
Throughout the show, you speak with a number of Vietnam veterans who are very open about their experiences. How did you find those people?
We found people through all sorts of networks. We had some help early on from Carol Reardon, who's a professor emeritus at the University at Penn State. And she is just an amazing resource for all things related to Vietnam. And then we made some other contacts with some veteran groups. And a lot of times what we would find is people would connect us to other people they knew. So it just kind of built. Once we got those first few initial contacts, we were able to find other people. And then for the anti-war perspective, we actually did a lot of digging through some old Collegian articles. We looked at some other college newspapers in the area and started looking to see what we could find there in terms of op-eds or people who were mentioned in articles. And then we did some digging and saw who we could get in touch with.
These people are so forthcoming and they're so eloquent about describing their experiences. And you said the story of Marcia Four, the nurse, was particularly moving for you. Tell me about her.
So Marcia was a nurse in Vietnam. She became a nurse, and then and she talks about this in the film. And then from there, when she was in nurses training, the military was pretty actively recruiting nurses and kind of making promises, you know, telling them that they'll kind of get more of a say, I think, than they thought in where they would go, and that they wouldn't have to go overseas to Vietnam, because obviously Vietnam was going on at the time, unless they requested it, and that they could go with a friend and all of these things. And then she enlisted and joined the military. And then I think she said about 6 months after she joined, lo and behold, without requesting it, she got her orders to go to Vietnam.
And she said she was not well prepared for that.
No, she said that a lot of the training she received was about more kind of general things, I guess. But in terms of what she needed to know as a nurse to help people on a battlefront, to be fair, I don't know if there's a way you could prepare for that.
The training at Fort Campbell before I went to Vietnam really had nothing to do with anything related to medical or nursing. We learned the Geneva Convention, what to do if we were taken by the enemy, we had to qualify with an M16. So I knew how to shoot somebody. I didn't know how to do that before I got there. But as far as the role we would have in the medical field and in the hospitals there and what we were going to even see, I was ill-prepared, unprepared for Vietnam. And I had no idea that what I was about to experience for the next 12 months of my life would, for the most part, affect the rest of my entire life.
Did Marcia Four talk to you about how her experience as a nurse in Vietnam affected the rest of her life, or did she keep that private?
She was very open with us, and I just want to say, too, that's one of the most amazing things about this experience was just how open people were and how willing they were to share with us. It's not easy to share your story, and I always try to be very grateful and appreciative when people do that because it's a very difficult thing. So Marcia, when she came home, she ended up quitting nursing for a period after she came home and then eventually did go back to nursing. But she just kind of went on with her life at first and didn't really realize that there was anything she needed to deal with. And then she ended up getting involved in veteran issues and veteran groups. She is actually involved with Vietnam Veterans of America and actually went on a trip to Vietnam. I think she's been on several where they're looking to locate remains of soldiers who were still missing and whose families are trying to bring them home. So that really, her connection with veterans is what sort of opened her up to realizing that she had things to heal from and had things to deal with. And it also helped her to heal from that by being able to help others and connect with others.
I want to listen for a moment to Ron Curtis talking about his experience in Vietnam.
It's so hot, and we're scared. And there's these guys that are coming back, and they're wearing American uniforms. Some guys were just walked past you, and it's like they didn't see anything. They weren't seeing anything, and it's like they had this blank stare, which turns out to be the 1,000-yard stare. I didn't know what that was. And you see this, and it really shakes you up. It really shakes you up because some of these guys, I mean, they look like old men. They look like they're in their 50s. And they could only be another year or two older than I was at the most. They just look old and something dead about them. I know now that those were the guys that had been in combat.
That effect he described sounded haunting. What is the 1,000-yard stare?
The 1,000-yard stare that Ron talks about witnessing in Vietnam and then eventually having when he leaves, I think it's just something that happens when people see really awful things day in and day out, and that's something that he described. Ron just had this amazing way of putting things into words so poignantly that you could just picture, you know, what he was talking about, and that was one of his phrases that stuck with me was the 1,000-yard stare.
Bill Perry talks about how among the poor and minorities, many of them didn't have access to good lawyers or the kind of connections that helped some other people avoid Vietnam. How widespread do you think that was?
Well, there are some people who it was no questions asked, you go in the military because that's what your family did and that was part of your tradition. But then for some people, especially once the draft was instated, who did talk about the fact that depending on kind of your situation in life, you might or might not have the abilities to avoid the draft either through connections that you had, through draft counseling, through different avenues that might be available to people maybe who come from a different socioeconomic background, people with more resources. That just wasn't a route that was available to everyone, and that a lot of people who didn't have access to those resources did end up drafted and did end up going to Vietnam.
Those of us born in 1947 knew we were all going to get drafted if we were in any kind of decent physical shape. If you had money, boom, you could get out one way or another. You knew doctors, you knew lawyers, you could do it. Half of them were family friends. You didn't even have to pay them. But my peer group didn't know any of them.
It was a war that was fought by poor folk. It was a war that was fought by minorities. The military was a way out. My thought was that I would spend 3 years and that would be it. Little did I know that I was on track to go to Vietnam the minute that I signed up.
The issue of race as it applies to war figures prominently in the documentary, and you got some people to speak very frankly about that. Let's listen to how Vietnam highlighted tensions due to race, but also helped soldiers learn to negotiate racial issues.
I went down to Fort Benning, Georgia for basic training. Now, living up in this area, we may have had one Catholic kid that went to school with us. You know, we had no idea what a Jewish kid was. It was just us white Anglo-Saxons. And now you're getting tossed in with a group of kids from Louisiana who I wasn't even sure they were speaking English.
Well, the military is a microcosm of the macrocosm. You have racism in the society, you have racism in the military. There's no escaping it.
It was a time of racial tension that was dangerous. The military doesn't speak about it very much, but it was a very, very difficult time.
It's an interesting question. It's so easy for the white guy to say, oh, no problem. You might ask someone who is of a different race, and their perception of how it was might have been very different.
America has some of its fatal flaws that the world knows about, and racism is one of them. You go on patrol, there'd be a little sign. Says, black man, why are you fighting this war? We never called you a nigger. You're here fighting for freedom, and you can't vote in Mississippi. I mean, there's a lot going on. Some guys broke out the Confederate flag and all that kind of crazy stuff. So we broke out the red, black, and green. It was just point, counterpoint. At the NCO Club, you know, we want to play Temptation, and they wanted to play Hank Williams. So there was always something going on. So you conciliate. You say, okay, we can have the Temptations Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. You guys can have Hank Williams Monday, Wednesday, Friday, okay? And you work those out.
Howard Kramer spoke first, then Dwight Edwards, Ryan McCombie, Fred Maurer, and Fred Rush. That was 50 years ago. Laws have changed since then, but I wonder whether racist attitudes have changed at all.
I can't speak to what it's like in the military. All I can say is that one of the reasons that it was very important for me to kind of have that section and look at that is because I think especially someone who only knows kind of cursory amounts of history of that time, I think of it being so interwoven with the civil rights movement and with just different societal tensions. I didn't think there was a way we could touch on this without talking about race. But I also didn't want that. I didn't want it to overshadow people's experiences.
Right. We're recording this right after Charlottesville, Virginia, and it's hard in light of so many recent events. It's really hard to look at how racism was back in Vietnam and not see that some of it is still around.
Yeah, I think it was important for me to include the discussion about race in Vietnam because, you know, in some ways we've moved past some things, but in a lot of ways we haven't. And I didn't think you could tell the story without examining the role that played. And as we reflect on then versus now. I felt like that was just an integral part of the discussion.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note. I'm Christine Allen. My guest is WPSU's Lindsay Whistle Fenton, who, along with colleague Frank Christopher, is co-producer and co-writer of the TV documentary A Time to Heal, which explores the Vietnam War from a Pennsylvania perspective. The documentary was produced by WPSU Penn State and will premiere Thursday evening, September 14th at 8 p.m. on WPSU TV, a few days before the PBS series on Vietnam by Ken Burns begins on WPSU TV and other PBS stations. Whistle Fenton also appears in the WPSU documentary A Time to Heal as she interviews Pennsylvanians who were deeply affected by the Vietnam War. You also met with a South Vietnamese man, Chu Le. He lived in the United States, has lived in the U.S. for quite a long time now. What was his story?
Chu Le came to the U.S. After Vietnam. He actually has this really amazing story that he shares a lot with local students. He was on a mission when they got the order to surrender. The South Vietnamese received the order to surrender, and he had some fuel left in his helicopter, and he decided to load it up with as many people as the chopper could carry.
What is it like that moment you realize that you're leaving your country, probably for good?
I had no feeling. I was numb at that time. And in the cockpit there, I pray, and I leave everything in his hand. And I accept to die, because if I come back, I'll die anyway.
Roger. Roger that.
They flew and flew, and it was like out of a movie. I think his 20-minute light came on that he was running out of fuel, and they hadn't seen anybody. And then the fog cleared, and they saw, I think, an aircraft carrier, and they were able to land. So it was really just right out of a movie. And then from there, he came to the U.S. and has lived here since.
Wow. And he sings in a church.
Yeah, his music is very important to him, and he has a beautiful voice, and he loves to sing. And he one of the things he talks about in the film is the role his faith played in when he came here, and that he feels when he sings, he feels a connection to God.
I can tell that you are really close to these people that you've spoken with, and I see that in the film as well. You're actually crying in some of those scenes. Yeah.
I just got choked up.
I did too. So, it is a very moving film. It really is. I was a little kid during some of the Vietnam War era, but even with all the footage I saw on TV, it never quite sunk in for me what it was like in Vietnam until I watched this documentary. And a particularly striking moment for me that I want to play is where Dwight Edwards talks about what it smelled like and the sound of the explosions and snakes.
It was a funky place. You come off a ship with your rifle, you got your stuff, and this might sell you a Coke, and in the background you can hear boom, 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 explosions. I'm saying, oh man, what is this? What is this? And it was a foul smell. Before you saw an enemy, there were snakes there, elephants, tigers, and it was just a whole hostile environment. And I said, my God, here it is, and it's hot. And I said, here I am. This is what it's like. This is what I've come to.
Was Vietnam a shock to the veterans you talked to when they first arrived there?
Oh, yeah. And I think that was one of the most universal reactions we got from people when we asked people what it was like when they first arrived or what they remembered when they first arrived. It was two things. It was the heat and the smell. Every single person we talked to had that same vivid response to this overwhelming smell and this just all-encompassing heat.
How were they prepared for Vietnam, or were they?
For the most part, it doesn't sound like they were very prepared. I think, I don't know if there is a way to prepare for that kind of a situation. I mean, not only are you dealing with the fact of you're in another country, you're halfway around the world when a lot of people hadn't traveled outside their hometowns before they deployed, you're also in the middle of a combat zone with, you know, and adjusting to that. So I think it's just a totally overwhelming experience. And I think you get your basic training, but in terms of culture or language or anything like that, most of the people I talked to said they didn't really receive much in that way.
And I think that it opened a little Western Pennsylvania boy's eyes to a much bigger world and another race of people. You know, at the time, I think I was a sophomore in high school before I saw a black person, let alone an Asian.
Kind of like aliens in a foreign land. The language, the smells, the food, the people, the whole thing. You kind of cloister to yourselves for the first time and deal with yourselves as a smaller group. Draws you closer together.
I want to ask you about some of the newsreel and old footage that's incorporated into the documentary. How did you find that?
We had a phenomenal team of interns working for us who found a lot of things. We also, Wisconsin Public Television had done a lot of the legwork on this and had archived just a ton of footage and cataloged it, which really was a phenomenal resource. You know, it really helped make the documentary what it was. We also got some assistance from the Army Heritage and Education Center that provided us with some great footage. So just a lot of digging and a lot of help from people who had some great resources to share.
Was there some Penn State footage in there as well?
There is. There's footage of the anti-war movement on campus from a film called Voices for Penn State, The Struggle for 69, which I believe is actually a WPSU production.
Let's listen to some of the thoughts of anti-war protesters from A Time to Heal with a little bit of vintage protest footage in between.
America to me was highly moral, the land of opportunity, and the Vietnam War just seemed like an unjust war, something that our country should not be doing. So it was out of a sense of moral outrage that I got into the anti-war movement.
This is where we draw the line!
I was prepared at the time to go to Canada. I was so dead set against the war in Vietnam that I was going to go to Canada. And I was really worried because I had a very conservative father. I didn't want to abandon my family. I didn't want to go to Canada, but I did not want to go fight in a war that I didn't believe in.
Well, I think the one thing I wanted to say, just how much I appreciate everyone who shared a story for this. This is not an easy period to talk about. This is not easy for people who were there, who opposed it, who lost people who were there. And it is very difficult to open up about those kinds of feelings on camera. So I would really like to offer a heartfelt thank you to everyone who was willing to do that.
I think very few of us know just how much work goes into 1 hour of a television documentary like A Time to Heal. How long have you been working on this project?
I have been working on this project for about a year, since last summer. And then my colleague, Frank Christopher, has been working on it, I think, for several years before that, because it's a much larger project than even just the documentary. It's a radio documentary. It's a website. It's an outreach campaign. So this was several years in the making.
How did you spend most of the time that you spent on it?
I started by just trying to learn as much as I could. I read several books. I watched a ton of documentaries, listened to some podcasts. And then we did a lot of pre-interviews and phone interviews with people, just trying to get a general sense. And then I had conversations with Frank, who lived during Vietnam. And I just wanted to get some sort of a basic understanding. But in a way, I also still wanted to stay a little bit fresh, because I think that when you come at something not knowing much about it, you ask different questions and you have different curiosities than someone who's well immersed in it. So I wanted to find the balance of knowing enough, but still being able to come at it with fresh eyes when I went into the interviews.
How many hours of video did you have to shoot to get the 1 hour's worth that's in the documentary?
A lot. I think anyone who's worked in film will know that. Each interview was probably 90 minutes to 2 hours, and I think we talked to 18 people, and that's just interviews. And then there's B-roll shooting, and there's, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't do an 18.5-hour series, because there's so many amazing things that people said that, you know, you can't possibly put it all in to one film. But it was a lot of production.
Out of this whole experience of producing and shooting A Time to Heal and co-writing it in your case, what are the most important thoughts that stay with you?
Well, I think one thing for me personally that sticks out to me is how humbled I felt by this process. I went into this kind of naive, very naive, and you know, I would be in these interviews and I would ask something without probably really even fully understanding what I would ask. And then just some of the emotion that would come forward or some of the stories that were shared with me were just so incredible, sometimes painful, sometimes beautiful. But I think I just had this sense of humility throughout the whole thing and gratitude for getting to talk to the people that I talked to and just awe at the courage of the people I spoke with and the people that they shared stories about and also a sense of humility on their end, because everyone I talked to I would describe as a hero, and they would of course say, no, I just did what I needed to do. I did what was asked. I did what my country needed. But in my eyes, they're all heroes and they're all amazing people.
Can you talk about what WPSU is doing to commemorate the Vietnam War outside of this TV documentary?
In addition to A Time to Heal, the television documentary, WPSU is also producing Time to Lay It Down, which will be a radio documentary about the music during Vietnam. And that is a 2-hour series that Frank Christopher produced and directed. And another component of this overall project is the website that we've created, timetoheal.wpsu.org. We are trying to collect people's stories, so I would love to put out a request that if people have stories, it doesn't have to be veteran stories. It can be anybody who has a memory that they would like to share from the Vietnam War. They can go on that website, upload content, upload videos, upload photos, or just send us a letter and we'll put the story on the website. But we would like to create a living history on this website.
What do you hope that viewers will take away from watching A Time to Heal?
I think one of the most challenging things about this project was trying to balance two very different perspectives, trying to balance the experience of the veteran community and trying to balance experience of socially active individuals who felt strongly against the war, so strongly that they demonstrated against the war, and to treat both stories with respect. So I hope that people watching this will come away with an understanding that this was an incredibly divisive time in history. And I think if people can realize that even after something like Vietnam, if people can all these years later talk about it and be respectful of each other and hear each other out, that really says something about what we as people are capable of, and that maybe that sets a precedent for some other conversations that need to happen, and just kind of having that respect and that effort toward understanding.
Lindsay Whistle Fenton, thanks for joining us for Take Note.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Take Note. I'm Christine Allen. My guest was Lindsay Whistle Fenton, who, along with Frank Christopher, is a co-writer and co-producer of the WPSU TV documentary A Time to Heal, exploring the Vietnam War from a Pennsylvania perspective. The program will premiere Thursday evening, September 14th at 8 p.m. on WPSU TV. For more information on the WPSU TV and radio documentaries, and to share your own Vietnam story, visit wpsu.org/a time to heal.